Maine's political pulse is made possible by listeners and by Lee Auto Malls, family-owned and operated since 1936, with locations from Bangor to Saco. Learn more at leeauto.com.
This is Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, along with Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Mistler, and senior political correspondent, Mal Leary. Steve, Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins is keeping herself in the thick of talks over future coronavirus relief policy. What has she been up to in the last week?
Well, Erwin, Senator Collins has certainly been involved in discussions with the Biden administration, but to what extent we can call them actual negotiations is a little bit unclear to me, since it seems like a lot of this stuff is being discussed via press release and photo op. And that includes the one Collins got, the photo op she got with Biden during a meeting in the Oval Office on Monday. You know, and of course, the reason for these confabs is that Collins and a group of nine other Republicans submitted a counter proposal to Biden's $1.9 trillion relief plan. And the Republican proposal is about a third of Biden's plan, which has prompted some Democrats to criticize it as inadequate and unserious in some circles. A lot of this pushback from Democrats stems from the Obama presidency. He was roundly criticized for basically negotiating with a Republican party that had, you know, pretty much vowed to oppose everything that he did. So that's kind of the backdrop to these negotiations, such as they are. I mean, and there's obviously a uniquely Maine angle to that history. If you recall, the Obama administration really rolled out the red carpet for a former Senator Olympia Snowe. They really wanted to get her on the Affordable Care Act, you know, to get her to vote for that. So much so that he joked in his memoir that he promised to name the bill after her if she voted for it. Of course, she didn't vote for the Affordable Care Act, and she faced a lot of pressure from her party to oppose it, although she said that she voted against it because, you know, the Democrats didn't include any of her changes. And Obama also negotiated with Collins on that stimulus bill. And Democrats now believe that those talks with Collins and other Republicans whittled down a stimulus bill that kept the economy sagging for an unnecessary period of time, leading to GOP wave elections in 2010 that wiped out their majority in the House and then later in the Senate in 2014. So it just seems to me that the Biden administration doesn't want to go down that road. I think they would love to have Collins on board with their plan, but they're not going to, you know, promise to name the bill after her.
Yeah, but there's also, I mean, the other interesting thing here, Mal, is that this is not the Gang of Eight. This time it was a Gang of 10, which of course is a magic number in the Senate. If 10 Republicans do vote with Democrats, they can overcome a filibuster. But the interesting question is, what price will they ultimately elicit for that?
Well, I think you got a situation here where Joe Biden, as a senator, spent an awful lot of time with other senators, including Senator Collins, on all kinds of bills. And I think he's got a unique ability, after all of those years, to figure out, is this a real negotiation or are we doing posturing? And if we're doing posturing, I can do that just as good as anybody. And he did. He has the photo op, and then he turned around the next day and said, reconciliation. We're going to bypass this bipartisan stuff entirely, use the reconciliation process, and get this bill passed in a few weeks. I think that's actions speak louder than words, as they say in politics. And in this case, you clearly had Joe Biden saying, okay, we'll talk, but if you don't go along pretty closely with what I want, I'm not going to cave in at all. And the bill that's going through now is just slightly under what the president proposed. And that's based on some minor changes in the legislation.
I've been reading just recently, too, that polling seems to indicate that a lot of what's in Biden's plan is popular across the country, even to some degree with Republicans, which I imagine will strengthen Biden's hand in whatever it is he decides to do.
I think that's true, especially these direct payments to Americans, you know, the $1,600 checks. They're very popular. In fact, they're so popular that I think former President Trump made a huge mistake not proposing these things in October. If the Democrats ram this through with a majority through reconciliation, they get to claim credit for it too. You know, if Republicans don't get on board with that, they won't be able to claim credit for any of this direct relief to American households.
In the middle of the night, they passed an amendment that says that minimum wage increase in the bill won't take effect until after the pandemic is over. One of the big criticisms the Republicans had is, what are you doing raising the minimum wage when we're in the middle of a pandemic and millions of people out of work? And in this case, Bernie Sanders got up and said, oh yeah, I can go along with that entirely, 99-0. They defused that situation. On the question of those stimulus checks, they're also defusing it because they adopted an amendment from Collins and Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia that set a cap on family income per year. Other than that, there's some proportionality from $50,000 and $75,000 up to those figures. Again, taking the concerns, legitimate concerns raised by people like Collins, it says, hey, do we really want to be giving these to upper middle class as opposed to middle and lower middle class who really need the help?
All right. Well, if efforts at a compromise don't succeed, what the Democrats are prepared to do, as you've both been mentioning, is to use that budget process called reconciliation, which would enable them to get much of what they need with only a majority vote. But interestingly, Steve, a Democrat in the main delegation is not on board with that.
Just for listeners' sake, basically reconciliation is this process that allows the majority in Congress to basically steer a bill through while avoiding the 60-vote filibuster margin in the Senate. So the Democrats are using this process now because they're just concerned that they're not going to get Republican help anyway, and so they want to at least get this thing going. Representative Jared Golden, who represents the 2nd Congressional District, Golden opposes this, and he had an interesting rationale for doing so. He was basically hinging his argument on the fact that money to help with the rollout of vaccines, help states administer them, hire vaccinators, all this other stuff, that money was included in this huge $1.9 trillion plan. And he's saying, well, why don't we just take that out and pass that as a standalone measure? He was basically saying that we need to pass that now, basically arguing that the reconciliation process is too slow. Well, there's a big variance in how reconciliation works, and that, you know, say 20 times it's been used since 1980, at least according to the Congressional Research Service. I mean, the shortest period of time is like 27 days. And, you know, one of the longest one was like over a year. It was like 384 days or something. It seems to me that they could probably do this quickly in terms of Congress's, you know, in their frame. There was only two Democrats to oppose reconciliation. You know, he's in the minority here, but this is kind of his thing. He's really leaning in to this centrist bipartisan reputation that he's trying to craft for himself, you know, much like Senator Collins did back, you know, when she first started in Congress. And so I think that's another way to read what's going on here, you know, in addition to his objections, which seem, you know, relatively reasonable. But the alternative to not using reconciliation is not passing anything at all.
It was interesting in talking with Congressman Golden about this. Was he looking at the practicality of the situation? He says the need right now, as you mentioned, Steve, is to get that money out there to pay for vaccinations, to pay for more vaccine, to pay for the distribution costs, and do it now. That literally could be in the pipeline in 24 hours because it's broad bipartisan support to do that. That's why he was pushing it. He knows that reconciliation, as you pointed out, could go a very long time. The latest estimate I heard on this bill is sometime in the middle of March before they could finally pass it under reconciliation and send it to President Biden. Well, that's a considerable amount of time when states are not going to be getting that money to buy vaccine, to distribute vaccine, to pay for all those costs for protective gear that's needed when you give the vaccine. So I think he's taking a very practical approach that is indicative of the Common Sense Caucus. That's kind of, you know, they're the problem solvers. They want to try to solve problems and get them done and move on to the next problem. And I think that's very different attitude that we've seen from a lot of folks that are in Congress.
Call me cynical, but it also is probably good politics for Golden as well to be striking a somewhat middle ground considering the congressional district he represents.
Absolutely. You know, if you read, too, his statement, it was very pointed and not at Republicans. It was pointed at Democratic leadership for doing this. You know, basically, almost a rhetorical question. Well, why would they leave vaccination money in this bill? Why would they do that? Are they afraid of losing their leverage? And of course, you know, of course, that's what they're afraid of. But the fact that he would point it out and put it in a statement like that is that's certainly geared to his constituents.
Our next item is actually about an early endorsement of Governor Mills. Steve, does this mean the 2022 campaign is already underway?
It seems so, at least from the perspective of Emily's List, which is this group that, you know, helps elect pro-choice women. They were huge backers of Janet Mills when she ran for the Democratic nomination in 2018, so much so that they actually ran a bunch of ads in the Democratic primary, which is relatively unusual. You could make the case that they helped Mills because she was in a pretty tight race with Adam Cody, who ended up, you know, finishing second in the ranked choice runoff. In this case, they came out and endorsed her, and she hasn't even announced that she's running for re-election yet. I mean, we all expect that she will. But I think in this case, it's helpful to think about why they might have done that. And I think the reason is that an early endorsement like this, when the candidate hasn't even announced re-election, is often designed to sort of ward off the potential for any primary challenge. And I think you can look at it this way. I mean, let's not forget that Emily's List, you know, they came out and endorsed Sarah Gideon, the former Democratic U.S. Senate candidate who was challenging Senator Collins. And they did that like when there was still a primary, before when it really even had formed. There's a history here, and I think that it's hard not to look at what they did without that history in mind.
The governor's taking the very cautious route by saying, you know, she's too busy right now trying to deal with a pandemic to worry about a reelection campaign. Well, that's exactly the position she ought to take, because that's what people want her to be doing, is dealing with the pandemic and not worried about an election that's 2 years away.
And it does seem to me, though, that this is part of what has become in politics in Maine, as well as in the United States, the essentially permanent campaign. We're not even several months away from the end of the last election. And here we are talking about a campaign for an election almost 2 years away.
We saw the Republicans jump on the original supplemental budget proposal from the governor. I mean, Paul LePage putting out a statement that the double taxation shouldn't occur. Well, if you listen carefully, when they brought the bill forward, they said, this is our first draft, and we would like to be doing this, but there's no money. Well, if this reconciliation process we're talking about works, there will be money coming to the states, and there's already a pledge there from the governor to take that money and use part of that money, I should say, not all of it, to fill this tax conformity question. And that kind of diffused their effort. But to your point, they were quick to jump on this again 2 years before, sorry to say, she's absolutely wrong. You know, this is terrible, terrible, terrible. When she really hadn't proposed it, except as a kind of, I know she hates when I say this, a placeholder in the budget until it gets actually worked upon. And they've got the revenue estimates that they have to redo. They know what's coming in from the federal government. All those questions have to be answered.
Yeah, to your point, though, Erwin, which I think is a good one, because I remember when I first started covering politics, there was always this lamenting of the fact that after every presidential election, the next one immediately began, right? We didn't really have to think about that in statewide or even local races, but we're getting to that point where we do. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that there's so much money sloshing around.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder how that impacts the window for legislating, as it were. I mean, once upon a time, you could count on a certain period of time post-election when legislators could really legislate and not worry so much about the election. And one suspects that that's less and less these days. Mal, Steve, thank you both very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And that's Maine's Political Pulse for this week. A reminder, we update the Pulse podcast each Friday. You can find it, of course, at mainepublic.org or perhaps wherever else you found the podcast today. In addition, Steve Mistler has the Maine's Political Pulse newsletter, which comes out on Friday morning. You can have that directly sent to your email inbox by going to our website, mainepublic.org. You can also hear portions of the Pulse on Weekend Edition Sunday and Morning Edition on Monday mornings. Willis Ryder Arnold is our producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. We'll talk to you next time.